Okay, so before we get started, any questions about what we've been working through so far? Homework due tomorrow by 5. Already gotten a number of those. I think pretty simple for the first one. Yes, sir.
Do you grade the homework
based on completeness or correct? So how do I grade the homework? What I will look for is problem by problem. Did you make a serious effort? Are you at least something in the right direction? And then pass, fail, problem by problem. So make an effort, you're going to be fine. The homework's for you guys. Right? I'll post solutions usually by the Monday following the Friday they're due. That way you can compare right away. You don't have to wait for me to send stuff back to you. If I get homework from everybody by 5 p.m., which I hope I do, on Friday I'll go ahead and post the solutions then. But I don't want late submissions to just copy what I did. Other questions? All right, so we're going to keep marching forward. We're going to start chapter 2 today. So thus far, we've talked about free vibration, chapter 2, and we're going to be in chapter 2 for the next 6 weeks or something. It's a big chunk of the book, and what we're going to cover is about single degree of freedom systems that have some kind of input acting on them. All right, so we're moving away from free vibration into forced vibration. Okay, so chapter 2. And again, we're going to focus for now on single degree of freedom systems. And we're going to talk about forced vibration. Pushing on a system, we have some random input to the system. And then how does this flexible system react? Okay. We're going to start by talking about step inputs, section 2.2. What is a step input? Should have seen these in controls, I hope. Yeah, so step input. It's called a step input. I'll sketch a rough one right now. Looks like that, generally. Right. So, looks like a step. Right. So, generally speaking, we're talking about an instantaneous change in input. Right? And that instantaneous change, the domain in which that happens can be anything. Right? It could be an instantaneous change in desired position. Right? I want my system, my desired position of the system right now is here. Right now I want it over there. Right? So my desired position can change instantaneously. The actual position of my system can't. Right? My desired speed could change instantaneously. Right? You get a green light at a stoplight. Your desired speed goes from being zero to the speed limit, or whatever. Right? Instantaneously, your desired speed has changed as a step input in desired velocity. Right? You can have step inputs in force. So, let's talk about a step input in some more detailed context. We're going to have, in this case, something like the system we've been dealing with. Okay. But instead of it being fixed to ground, we have it fixed out here through a spring and damper to something that I can control. And we'll match the book, and they actually call that Y in the book. So my input to the system here is that Y, the position of this point here. All right. So the objective is kind of move this thing around by moving that guy. All right. As we talked the other day in lecture, this is effectively a mass under PD control. All right. The equations are exactly the same. Okay. So let's talk about what those equations are. do a little quick review. First thing I want to do is what? Free body diagram. What kind of forces do I have acting on this body? Damper in the spring. Anything else? I think that's it. We want to always pick some kind of frame and be explicit about it. For most of what we talk about in this class, that kind of frame makes sense. Okay. So, what then is the force of the spring here? It's K delta always, right? So we could start there and then start discussion from there. What's that delta? Well, it's some kind of difference between X and Y, right? We have to pick it in this case to match kind of how we've drawn the free body diagram. Okay. So in this case, if y is greater than x, it matches our free body diagram. Right? So that means if y is greater than x, that's positive, it's in the positive direction. Okay. Same thing with our damper. Well, I need to look at this. Well, if y dot is larger than x dot, the force from the damper is going to be positive, and that's what matches our free body diagram, so that's what I want to do. And if you drew your arrows down here the other way, you just go through that same process. And as long as you get the ordering here right to match how you drew this arrow, everything should work out fine for you. And that's probably a good exercise, like I said, for these problems. This springs and dampers and things, you can draw the arrows on your free body diagram however you want. You just have to sort out the actual amplitude of it to make sure it matches. So then we have equation of motion. It looks like that for this system. Let's divide everything by M. Okay. What is this term over here? K over M times X in this case. That's going to be natural frequency. And we see that actually same coefficient shows up over here, right hand side. What's C over M? Okay, 2 zeta omega n. Okay, so then we can write it kind of in this normalized type form where we don't have all those parameters floating around. We can have our equation of motion for this mass spring damper system that has a positional input. And this positional input, just to kind of give you some of the book terminology, the book calls these seismic inputs if it's an input in position that's driving the system. Right? It's called seismic because, hey, that's what happens, the ground moves, it's a seismic excitation to a building or something. Right? So think about when we talk about seismic inputs, which we'll talk about for the next 6 weeks or something, we're talking about inputs in position are what's driving the system, not a direct force. Okay. All right, so we have an equation of motion. So what I want to get to, and what we're trying to get to, is for this system, if I have a step input in y, what's the response of x? So really what I want to get to, and the kind of question we're trying to solve, is the time response of x, given that y of t is a step input in position. Okay. So what's it going to be? Don't think about the equation yet. What's it going to be intuitively? What's the physical response look like? I have this mass. It's sitting here at rest. And I take and move y over a little bit instantaneously. It's going to move to the right. That's right. It's not going to move instantaneously, right? It has some mass. It can't move instantaneously, right? What else is going to happen? Take this guy and I moved him over instantaneously. It compresses the spring, which is that's what makes the mass move, right? And it'll end up stretching the spring. And it's going to go back and forth. Back and forth around what point? Original unstretched length of the spring. Equilibrium length of the spring. But where is that at now relative to my original position? It's going to be some distance over, however far I move the y. Right? Once I move y over, and I'm just holding it there, what does that system look like to you? Yeah, the same one we've looked at before. Like, we had this spring and damper fixed to something that wasn't moving before, right? So if I move this over instantaneously and I hold it there perfectly forever, it's just like the one we saw where this was actually attached to a wall. It's just that our wall has moved over a little bit instantaneously before it became a wall. So that kind of tells us then that, hey, if I think about this position of x of t, right, which is what this is a function of, it's going to be some oscillation around a set point. Which we know is that. Right? But that set point is not just zero anymore, right? It's some kind of offset. And maybe we can call that x of d, the desired position of that mass. Because we know if I move this over xd, the mass also is going to move over xd and oscillate over there and hopefully settle to xd. And then so we have, in this case, we've kind of redefined what zero is we're oscillating around. And then we just have so exactly what you guys just described to me. If I take and I move y to position xd, the system's going to move over and oscillate around as some kind of new xd. And if it has damping, it's going to settle to that new position eventually. So I have the new set point plus some damped oscillation towards zero around that. Remember, this guy goes to zero as t goes to infinity, right? So in the limit, if I have any damping at all, xt ends up being at xd, how far I moved my input. With me so far? Yes, sir. We're assuming it is right now, right? So it's fixed. X0 and Y0, this thing just sits here forever, right? And then at time, sometime, I move this over. So that compresses the spring and that starts pushing. Right. With me so far? Okay. Let's figure out what A and B need to be. Okay, we're talking about a system at rest and I have just a step input in. Well, how do I get to what those coefficients are? Some kind of initial conditions. Okay, so let's think about this. Let's say my step input occurs at time 0. Okay. So then I have some initial conditions for my system. Step input, way over there. Okay. We've said, hey, this guy's at rest. So what's the position of x at time 0? 0. What's the velocity of the mass at time 0? It's going to be 0, too. Right. So we have two initial conditions that we need to just solve our equation for. So we know then that, hey, this is this guy at 0 is just 1, right? That guy at time 0 goes to 0. Let me just write it out. All right. So when t is 0, this guy, e to the 0, is just 1, right? So that becomes a 1. What's the sine of 0? Is 0. So in this case, what's cosine of 0? That guy's 1. So in this case, we just have, right? So we know that a is minus xd. That one's easy. Okay. Look at the velocity, so we need to get to x dot, so we can take derivative, oops, sorry, missed a term, just doing math, trying to do it quickly so we can talk about vibrations. So there, I don't have a t there. There's no t. Zeta omega n. All right, so we can kind of go through the same process. That guy goes to 1. This guy goes to 1. That guy's going to 0. You know, that's going to 1. That goes to 0. That goes to 1. And we can collect terms. N A plus, make sure I got my math right. I sure did. And we know that has to be 0. So we know then that B has to be zeta omega N A over omega D, or knowing what A is, omega D. What's that omega D there? We've used throughout, just to make sure we're on. The damped natural frequency, right? What does that actually equal? Omega D is what?
It's omega n plus the square root.
Something to do with omega n and some kind of square root. Because you're saying all the right words, it's got to get them in the right order. 1 minus zeta square. So we can actually write it this way if we wanted. Those guys cancel. So we have V. So then we know x of t in closed form, we say, there's the step response of a mass spring damper system. starting from rest. So again, we have some new set point and then some oscillation around that new set point, some damp decaying oscillation around that new set point. Let's see what that looks like. Time, seconds. Okay, let's have plot x of t on the vertical axis. And let's say we have some kind of xd there. I'm going to space over the time of my inputs. I'm going to say actually 0 on this plot is actually right there. That'll give us a little bit of room to see what's happening at time 0 rather than it being buried over here in the axis. Okay. So if I have a step in my input y of amplitude xd, what does it look like on this plot? Yeah, it's just a line, so it's 0 for all time before that. We have a step, instantaneous change up to xd, and then it's xd for all time after that. There's my input. What's the response look like? Well, he said it's going to lag a little bit, right? And it's probably going to, spring's going to stretch out. So that means it goes beyond kind of y. So the response down here, it's 0. Now I have some change. It looks something like that. There's a nice pretty version in the notes for you. That overshoot's probably a little bit high. Okay. So the response looks like that. Okay. We can label some properties on this response if we want. Okay. And I'm going to draw some and see if you remember them, because hopefully you have seen them. Okay, let's start with, I'm going to say, draw some other points in this plot. So this is 0.9 xd. 0.1 xd, and I look at the time between those two. What's that called? And you'll kind of often see it as tr or maybe tau r. Not quite. Not quite. It is very much related to bandwidth, actually. We'll call that the rise time. And it's usually between like 10 and 90% of the final set point, that time that takes to go from 10 to 90%. Or you'll sometimes see it as between 5 and 95%. But basically, it's a measure of how quickly does the system respond to inputs. And that's kind of how it's related to bandwidth. Rise time. All right, let's look at, already gave this one away a little bit. What's that amplitude? It's called overshoot. You'll most often see this expressed as some kind of percentage of the step size. So you'll more often see percent overshoot. So if you overshot this, it went to 1.3 XD, it's a 30% overshoot. Okay. Let's do another So here I have, let's say, 1.02xd, 0.98xd, plus or minus 2% around the final set point. And I want the time from when the step occurred till when the thing settles within that plus or minus 2%. What's that time call? That's settling time, right. And you'll see that most often tau s. And you might see that, so this would be called a 2% settling time, because you're getting within 2% of the set point. You'll often commonly see 5% settling time. So settle within plus or minus 5% of the final set point. Okay. So for these systems, a little controls review a little bit already, for a second order system, which we have here, right? For second-order system, we actually can define these things in terms of system parameters. And actually, the case of settling time, generally we'll use an approximation, not the full derivation. Right? So for the second-order system, we know these in closed form. Right? So we actually can use these to inform control design for systems like this. Remember, we said, hey, this is just like PD control. So for this, we're talking about this in that, from that perspective, from the control's perspective. I have a mass under PD control. I want what some percentage overshoot, some small settling time, and a fast rise time. I can try to pick out what K and C should be, or KP and KD if you're talking PD control. Hopefully you guys have seen something like that before. All right, questions? None so far? Very suspicious of no questions. Let's keep moving then. All right, so let's take our same system. And instead of just doing a step input, let's do something a little bit more complex. The next step up in complexity. And we're going to take that guy and we're going to push on it with a pure harmonic. What do we mean by pure harmonic? It's a pure harmonic function. Anybody? I can hear you. Keep talking. Somebody? What's that? Yeah, what's it mean to be a pure harmonic, though? Mathematically. Yeah, we can leave that. Maybe. No, we don't need it for now. All right. So I shouldn't erase that, but... We're going to talk about pure harmonic inputs for now. And we're going to start out by talking about harmonic seismic inputs, position inputs, and that's the terminology the books use. So basically, we're talking about the system just like the one we had drawn up, right? Where we have an input so a system that looks something like the one we had drawn. And in fact, we're going to start out even simpler than that. We're going to say, hey, just ignore damping for right now. So we're going to start kind of here. No damper, at least initially. So if I have a harmonic input, and furthermore, if I have what we might call a pure harmonic input, what we mean is really it's a single sine or cosine that it describes the input. It's a harmonic function. So basically, we're talking about sine or cosine input. Okay. So if we're thinking about that, right? If I'm going to say, hey, this Y input I have on the system now is a pure sine, it's just a single sine function or a single cosine function. Right? And I start thinking about, well, how's the mass going to react to that? Okay. And we want to think about that probably, it's probably going to depend on a few things. Of course, it'll depend on how far I'm pushing back and forth, right? The magnitude of that input. But it's also going to depend on how kind of quickly I'm moving the thing back and forth, right? Well, what of a sine or cosine tells you that? Yeah, the frequency of it, right? So if I wrote my input something like that, where that omega is not the natural frequency of the system, that omega is the frequency of the input . Okay, so if omega is 2 pi, I'm moving back and forth at a frequency of 2 pi radians a second, whatever. So we kind of have a feeling intuitively, hey, the response of this mass depends, of course, on how big I'm pushing back and forth, but also kind of how quickly I am. And how quickly I'm pushing back and forth is described by the frequency of that harmonic input. Okay. So let's put this guy, this input frequency on the horizontal axis. And we have kind of amplitude of oscillation. And maybe let's write, hey, let's look at just maybe x over y, that relationship of input. So I'm not going to plot, we're not going to think about really right now, what's the absolute magnitude of x, but how does it move relative to how far I'm pushing on y, is what we're looking at. And then, hey, let's just look at the magnitude maybe. Okay. So if right, this is, we'll just call omega right now. Okay. If I have a really low input frequency, starts approaching zero, what does that mean for the response of this system? Well, first, what does that mean for what y is? It kind of approaches zero, maybe. Yeah, you can maybe think about it that way. But say it's non-zero. Say we're not getting to zero. What does this look like? How quickly is it changing, in other words? It's very slowly moving between plus and minus y bar, right? Very, very slowly. Well, in that case, how well does the response of the mass track that input, you think? Pretty well. It should track it almost exactly. Okay. So down here we have the feeling that if we're plotting this kind of ratio of output to input, and down here we're probably, that guy is going to be 1. Right? Down at low frequency, the position of that mass should almost exactly track the output. Okay? So we know we have some kind of point on our plot here. Okay. Think about the opposite case. What happens as this frequency gets higher and higher and goes out to infinity? So now I'm moving this thing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, quickly as I can. What happens to the response of the mass? I didn't quite hear you. Stops moving. Right. You can think about that. Basically, I'm moving it so forward and back so fast that this mass, which has inertia, doesn't really have any time to actually react to that motion. It's kind of a way to kind of get at it. So as my input frequency omega approaches infinity, the actual output here goes to zero in the limit. So out here, in the limit, we're going out to zero. Right. Again, think about that. I'm pushing this into infinitely high frequency. This mass can't react to that really at all. So it just sits there, it's not moving. Okay? Let's think about somewhere in the middle. What happens when the frequency of my input exactly matches the natural frequency of the system?
They're perfectly equal
but opposite. Something like that happens actually, which what causes a bigger fundamental issue here. Yeah, going to infinity means that. Yeah. Gets larger and larger, right? Well, it blows up basically. Right, that's a resonant system. You guys, you know, famous example of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge on Washington, right? Right. The wind excited that at its natural frequency. Its excitation grew forever. And it theoretically, it grows out to infinity. What happens in reality, stuff really starts to break before that. Okay. So we know around this natural frequency, things kind of blow up. If you don't have any damping, the theory says it goes out to infinity. Right. You have some damping, you go to some really high peak here. But still always kind of going to blow up at that natural frequency. Bad things happen there. Okay. So, without damping, that amplitude goes to infinity as omega goes to omega n. So we haven't drawn a single, we haven't written a single equation yet for what this frequency response looks like. And we've already done a pretty good job of mapping out what the response should look like. This type of plot is called the frequency response. I guess I should say that. And it's called that because it's telling you the response of the system as the frequency content of the input changes. So the step response we showed earlier was a time response. It's the, how the input changes as a function of time. This is a frequency response because it shows how the output, the motion of the mass changes as a function of the input frequency. Those are the two primary types of response plots we're going to look at, time response, frequency response. So we have a pretty good idea, right? And assuming nothing kind of crazy happens, which we're going to try to figure out, we can draw in the rest of the thing. It's a little bit harder to reason just from intuition about exactly what happens in here, but maybe you can just connect the dots like that, and we'll see if that holds. Okay. So I think it makes some intuitive sense to get a plot of this shape, right? Let's see if we can figure out the math to back that up. All right. We said, hey, let y be y sine omega t. We'll stick with that. Okay. What's the equation of motion for that system? Let's get there pretty quickly. I think we can draw a little tiny free body diagram since it's an easy system, which we always want to do. Right, we have just the spring force. Right. Gravity and normal balance, we'll leave those guys off for now. So we know And like we wrote up earlier today, we saw that that, as we've drawn that arrow, is k y minus x. So we have m x double dot plus kx equals ky. Exact same equation we had earlier, but we're ignoring the damping. Let c be zero, in other words. Right. Or we could write this like that. So there's our equation of motion. All right. So we said, again, just to reiterate, this omega is the frequency of the input. And that y bar is just some amplitude. Okay. So if I know that I have a differential equation of this form, and I have a input of this form, how do I get to that? Ideas? Solve ODE. Solve ODE? Okay, well, how do I get to the solution if I know my input has this form? How do I solve it? That's exactly what I'm asking. I remember. Well, I'm going to say, well, if I know I have a pure harmonic input, my output is also going to be harmonic. But I don't know generally whether it will be the same harmonic or not. And in general case, it's actually some mix of the two. And so I have to include both terms in my assumed solution. And I went the opposite order of the notes, so let me switch this up to match the notes I'm going to give you guys. Idea is basically the same, but we'll at least match constants with the notes. Save you some confusion a month from now when you're studying for an exam. Hopefully. There's something about the solution we should note. That's the steady state solution. What do we mean by that? Yeah, so basically it's not changing with time. It's reached its steady state. So what we're really kind of intuitively, what you want to think about that is that we've approached this system and we're looking at the response of this system, and it has been excited with this sine wave forever and will be excited by that same sine wave forever. Right. So in reality, there was some time where the thing was kind of starting up. Like it was sitting at rest and I started pushing the sine wave on it. You have some transient vibration. What we're saying is all that transient stuff's gone away. All right, it's had this sine wave input forever, and it's going to have this exact same sine wave input forever. So it's steady state, it's exactly the same forever. All right, so we assume that solution. We then just need to take that guy and plug it into our equation of motion and figure out what A and B need to be. So let's go down that road a little bit. So I need two derivatives of this guy, right? So I have my x double dot term, I have my x term, and I have y. So let's plug those guys in. Go. OK. Okay, so I'm trying to solve for A and B. How do I do that here? Linearize it? No, I don't have to do that, actually. So if I have transcendental functions on both sides of an equation, how do I get to the solution? Let me help you. There you go. If this equation is going to hold, right, I've done all my math right, I have, what has to be true? Are there any cosine terms on the right-hand side? So what does the coefficient of this guy have to be? Zero. So is omega zero? No. Omega n's not zero? No. So it means b zero. And so you match up transcendentals on both sides, you have to match up the coefficient. So that tells us here that, hey, B has to be 0. Well, we have that whole term then goes away. We can match sine terms. Right. We end up with that. So that can figure out what A is. And I just flipped the order there, so we got the minus sign kind of embedded. And then we said, well, hey, B had to be 0. So that tells us X of T is that. Okay. That's something. We made some progress. Let's think about what this means physically for the response. We said our input was y bar sine omega. What's our output look like? Something like the same thing, right? There's a y bar sine omega t there, right? But it just has some kind of coefficient, some kind of scaling factor out front. What does that mean for how the response changes y of t? Is the response, I'm going to ask this a different way. Oh, let's look at the coefficient, okay? This guy, right, omega n is fixed. That's a property of the system. Right? For any given input, omega is fixed. Right? If my input omega, right, is, sorry, greater than the natural frequency, what is the, what does this look like? So we're over here somewhere. Well, it's going to still be some kind of constant, but it's going to be a negative constant, right? What does that mean? So I have one, my input, presumably is positive, right? It has sine omega t. I have something, some kind of scaling that's negative sine omega t. What does that mean for the input? What do we say when we have those, that kind of relationship? In phase, out of phase? They're exactly out of phase. Right? You have one sine wave that's positive, and then you have the exact mirror the opposite way. We say those two sine waves are exactly out of phase. Okay. If omega n is larger than omega, right, we have some scaling factor, it's just a positive there. We have a sine wave that has the exact same frequency, just a different amplitude, so they're exactly in phase all the time. So if we don't have any damping, which we don't have here, then I know my response of that mass to a pure harmonic is either exactly in phase or exactly out of phase with the input. Right. I can plot that a little bit differently than we've done here. You don't see those plots as often as that form, but it can be helpful in this case. We have omega equals omega n, all right? And we saw that, hey, down at low frequency, well, what happens down here? So as omega goes to zero, what's this look like? Yeah, omega n squared over omega n squared. It's 1, so x of t is just y bar sine omega t. That looks a lot like what the heck we just did over here, right? So it goes to some constant, and maybe if you're plotting x bar over y bar, then it goes to 1. Okay. If omega equals omega n, what happens to this coefficient here? Goes to infinity, right? You're dividing by 0. Right? So we say it's positive there, so that goes up to infinity without damping. Okay. What happens as omega goes out to infinity? Goes to 0, right? You have a fraction with the infinite denominator. 0. And then it's a negative sign, right? Because this is the big part of it. So you end up with a plot that looks like that if you include the sign of this coefficient. Right? So in this case, what we're plotting is really that. That tells us how much the output is scaled relative to the input. If we plotted this and looked at the magnitude of that, we just get this guy. And in fact, that's what we'll do more often when we get to including damping, is looking at magnitude, and we'll actually break out the phase in a separate plot, which should sound something like a Bode plot, which hopefully you've seen before. Questions about that? So we got some equation that matches what our intuition was. That's pretty good. Nice when that happens. Let's look at how we might be able to kind of normalize this guy. Right? This has a natural frequency embedded in it. So there's some relationship there between omega and omega n that's kind of embedded in that coefficient. We'd like to maybe normalize that if we could. So let's look at that quickly. What I want to do is take this guy, and we can kind of think about that kind of in pieces if we want. I want to take the piece I have in the blue square brackets now and divide top and bottom by omega n. So I take that guy. I just want to do that to it, right? And hopefully you're offended that I showed that such simple math to you guys. I can do that. Right. So then I get some kind of normalized frequency. And then what that lets me do is kind of redraw these plots we just did. But now when omega equals omega n, this is a 1. Right. So what I really want to look at is the relationship, and what this lets us do is look at what's the relationship between my input frequency and the natural frequency of the system. So it's a more generalizable result than having to show 100 of these for all the various frequencies of your possible frequencies of your system. As long as I know that ratio, I can generate a plot that looks like this. Right. So here just become equals 1. And then as this normalized frequency of capital omega goes to infinity, it's still, it's like omega going to infinity because omega n is fixed. Right? As this comes down to 0, it's the omega that's changing. It's still that guy. Right. So let's just, we like to do this when we can. You guys with me so far? Making some sense, hopefully. Okay. What would a plot like this, this one of these frequency response plots, look like if I wanted to plot the acceleration of that mass? Well, let's walk through it. Okay. We'll work from this guy, right? So if I take two derivatives of that, right? Two derivatives of a sine, I end up with back to a sine, but I end up with negative sine fit in it. So there's the acceleration response. What has changed? Yeah, that minus omega squared in the numerator now as well. So what does that mean for the acceleration as the input frequency comes down to 0? It goes down to 0 too. So does that make some intuitive sense? If I have really, really low harmonic, pure harmonic input frequency, what's the acceleration of that mass? It's really low. It's going to go towards 0. That makes some sense. Okay. What happens near the natural frequency? Yeah, it still blows up, right? You still end up with a denominator that's going to 0. So we still get problems around the natural frequency. What happens out at infinity? That's maybe a little harder one to see a little bit. It goes to some constant, basically, right? So we can kind of get some feel of what the acceleration response might look like, too. It's a little bit different. Why would I care about acceleration response? I don't want my system breaking. Why would it break based on some kind of acceleration? Newton figured it out. What's the acceleration proportional to? Force, yeah. Right? So this can give me some information that this is what a system feels. We feel for it, we feel accelerations because they're proportional to force. So this can give you, you know, if you thought about this particular system, maybe tilted upright, and I have the road, right, as my input, then a harmonic is actually a decent representation of a really simple road, sine wave. I could get, well, this is going to be something, tell me something about what it feels like to ride in that car, if you will. Okay. Or maybe that's a model of a, the kind of suspension in a cushiony office chair or something. Okay, what does it feel like when somebody sits down in it? You get some feel for that here. Okay, we feel acceleration. Systems feel acceleration. That's what breaks them, right? F equals ma. All right, so let's walk back this way. Look at this system now. Let's change a few things and think about what might happen. That. I can leave that. Clean this up. So let's take my system. I don't have the same mass. And we ignored damping before, so let's ignore it now, too. So I have the same mass, and it's just sitting there. But now, let's say I have a direct force acting on that system. And let's say, well, hey, let that direct force be a pure harmonic. In this case of amplitude F bar. What changes? What do we expect this to look like? Let's walk through it again. Okay. If I have really low frequency harmonic input, what does this look like? I didn't quite hear you. Really low harmonic input. So it's moving through a sinusoid, but really, really slow. Not quite. It still has some amplitude. It's not changing very much per unit time. What does that look like in the limit? Yeah, some constant force, right? As omega goes down to zero, right? So if I thought about this mass spring system and I have some kind of effectively constant force on it, what's the response of X look like? What's that? It'll be about some constant displacement, whatever the balance of that spring and damper are, right, if this guy was constant. Right? So down here, we drew it as 1 before because we were normalizing, but let's just call it a constant now because we don't really know what it is yet. Really low frequency harmonic input direct force. It's kind of like me pulling on this with a constant force. Because it's changing so slowly per unit time relative to the dynamics of the system. Okay. What about the other side? What if I have a forcing function now? A pure harmonic forcing function with really, really high frequency. Switching the forcing back and forth, back and forth, back and forth as fast as I can. What's that? Approaches zero again, right? Same kind of argument, right? If I'm doing that, that frequency grows out to infinity, this mass, it doesn't have time to react, kind of. Right. So it still goes out to zero as the input frequency goes to infinity. Okay. What happens when that frequency matches the natural frequency? It's still going to blow up. Okay. So we expect a plot for the direct force case to look something like it just did for that seismically excited case. We'll see as we move forward, there are some minor differences, particularly once we add damping. But it kind of follows the same trends. Right? Bad things happen around the natural frequency. Right? Tend to go out towards small oscillation out of infinity. Maybe towards some constant down at zero. Okay. So let's at least set up this analysis for that guy. Okay. Let's see. Where do we want to go? All right. Given what we learned here, we're going to take a slight shortcut. We saw that when we didn't have damping, we saw we were going to either be in phase, exactly in phase, or exactly out of phase. So without damping, if we don't have that damping term on our equations of motion, which we're not, I can just exactly match the input and know that the other term would have dropped out anyway. So we're going to do that too. So we'll be going to do this part and get rid of those guys. And we'll have to come back to this part. Okay. For this guy, what's our walk down quickly? We have that mass, right? We just have the applied force. And the spring force. And of course, we have gravity and normal force balancing. Right? So we know equation of motion is looking like that. And of course, we can divide by m and get it in terms of natural frequency, which we like to do. So we have our direct force system without any damping. Mass spring system with a direct force without damping. Okay, so we have our assumed solution. And again, we're taking a shortcut here because I know from my equation of motion that I don't have any damping. It's the only time we can take this shortcut. So I'm just going to keep that straight. So I know then I have minus A omega squared sine okay. I can collect terms as I did before. And we can solve for A as we did before. That, which means, of course, that xt, we can also write that this way, all right, well, it seems a little bit fast, but it's just math, and it's in the notes for you to take a look at afterwards. We got two, based on our undamped mass spring system with a direct force, assuming that direct force is a pure harmonic and a sine, we knew, hey, that response has to be also a pure sine of with some coefficient. Solved this out and figured out what that coefficient had to be. Well, what do you see there? Hopefully you see that, right? So we end up in the same kind of situation, right? Where we have basically, there's my force input, and I have just some kind of scaling on it for my response. And that scaling factor is frequency dependent, just like it was for the seismically excited case. Right? Everything we're talking through, let me make sure I get this to you guys just so you know where to look. These are talking about now are called direct force. And this is section 2.4. So these direct force, I will put in parentheses, we're talking at least for now, about undamped systems. Right, we didn't have any damping here. So again, like we saw before, like we saw for the seismically excited case, I'd really end up with just some kind of scaling factor on my input that determines the output in the steady state case. And we can end up with a plot that looks like this one. And we can walk through and look at that. Well, hey, at omega equals omega n, we end up with the zero in the denominator again. It's going to blow up. Okay. We can look as omega goes out to infinity. What happens to this guy? It goes to zero again. Okay. As omega goes to zero, what happens to this guy? Goes to some constant. And we can solve for what's f bar over m omega n squared. So we end up with exactly the plot we thought we should get, which is nice. Okay. We, of course, can take and normalize this one. Right? You can divide top and bottom by omega n squared. Okay. This one ends up being not quite as nice in terms of the actual equation that pops out. We still will often talk about this system in terms of normalization. So if you want to take a look at the steps of that, it's just divide top and bottom by omega n squared, and you got it. Okay. Questions? Yes, sir.
Is the constant on the curve the same
curve? Yeah, so it matches that over there. That's what we said back here. When we plotted for the seismically excited case, we were looking kind of how far does x move relative to y? So if they're moving exactly the same, we know that's one. In this case, we just knew it looked kind of like a constant force, but we didn't know how far it would deflect. So this tells you how far it deflects, that constant, as omega goes down to zero. Other questions? We have 3 more minutes. So we had this one for direct force, right? And we had that for the seismically excited case. What part of these two equations is really telling you what's happening with the response? Or telling you what's happening with the response relative to what the input is? Just that coefficient part, right? So really what tells us, what gives us kind of interesting information is that part of these two equations. And is that part is some kind of frequency-dependent coefficient times the input. So if we take the input times some kind of function, transfers over to what my output is. So this, what we've solved for here, and we'll see on Tuesday, I suppose, is basically the kind of vibrations spin on transfer functions, which you should have seen a lot of when you were in controls. So transfer functions, they just transfer the input to the output. That's what's happening here. And if we wrote here kind of x of t over y of t, you end up with just that left, and you have output over input, that's a transfer function. So we'll see those here too. And we'll talk more detail about those on Tuesday. All right, see you guys next week.